right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, February 24th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy 1 degree Tuesday morning here in upstate New York. I am just about done with this cold. Most of us have about 5 feet of snow sitting up on the roof still. And this is getting to be kind of dangerous. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a very productive spring, considering how much snow is everywhere. The lakes are just about frozen. It means we're not going to thaw out until at least June. So lots to look forward to. All right, guys, I got to remember where we left off yesterday. I think we were talking about. My brain's not working. Yes, Plum Island in Kansas. We were talking about the new bourbon virus and that CRE that has appeared in the FDA, knowing full well that those endoscopes couldn't be cleaned properly and still allowing them to be utilized all over the place. I still am going to say that they have a massive class action lawsuit on their hands. And, and now that the FDA has admitted that they knew that those endoscopes couldn't be cleaned properly, I think the FDA should be held accountable for some of those. After we looked at that story last week that it talked about the FDA knowing fully well that many of the studies that have been published had either been changed or manipulated or whatever, and they did not make any type of retraction, they should be held responsible. Isn't that like the one group that we're supposed to look to for our food and drug of safety? I think so. So the fact that they're not protecting us, what good are they then? And they're fast-tracking vaccinations and different technologies, the more slippery palms and butt-slapping there is. All right, honestly, I don't know where I feel like going today. I crashed out last night with a headache, and I woke up this morning with a headache. So I really didn't spend much time reading heavily before the show that usually gets me fired up. So when I get here, I'm just ranting and raving. But you know what? We have more than enough information to talk about. I probably have weeks worth of stuff that I never touched. Here's something interesting that somebody posted the other day, and the picture was just so horrifying I had to share. But you know what? This might be a good way for us to get fired up here. This article actually was from November 9th, 2011, but it doesn't change any of the information. 13 most evil U.S. government human experiments. Yes, what? They experimented on humans? Oh, yes, they do. They do frequently. The U.S. government has been caught conducting an insane amount of vile, inhumane, and grisly experiments on humans without their consent and often without their knowledge. Does that sound familiar? So, in light of recent news, oh, this what happened in 2011 of the U.S. infecting Guatemalans with STDs. Oh, another group that they infected with STDs. Here are 13 of the most evil, for lack of a better word, cases of human testing is conducted by the United States of America. Get ready to become one of those conspiracy nuts. Yes, they always call us conspiracy nuts. You will never fully trust the government again. Project One. Project MK Ultra, sub-project number 68. The CIA ran Project MK Ultra, paid Dr. Donald Ewan Cameron for sub-project 68, which would be experiments involving mind-altering substances. The entire goal of the project was to probe examination into methods of influencing and controlling the mind and being able to extract information from resisting minds. So in order to accomplish this, the doctors took patients admitted to his Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal and conducted therapy, quote unquote, therapy on them. The patients were mostly taken in for issues like bipolar depression and anxiety disorders, and the treatment they received was life-altering and scarring. You know, what's really frightening about just this description is I see this exact same thing ramping up again, you know, as they revise the DSM to include all of these new disorders that we had read something the one day. Many of those new disorders were come up with, had been come up with, had been created by the pharmaceutical companies because they had a drug to, quote unquote, treat them. And when Obama, after Sandy Hook and his 43 executive actions, put the psychiatrist kind of as the one in charge. And, you know, one of the things about New York Safe Act, this phase two, that I don't know if they fully rolled that out or not yet, but I know that they're definitely planning on it, and maybe they haven't. It's just been real quiet because people are going to freak out. They want you to have psychological evaluations as part of being a gun owner. You know, how many other things do you think are going to require psychological evaluations? Like, I don't know, your parent who doesn't believe in vaccinating your children with all the poison bullshit they're putting into the vaccines. Oh, you must have a mental disorder, right? Didn't we mention that one yesterday, the oppositional defiance disorder? You know, so don't put it past them. I mean, this kind of stuff really scares me because we know that they've done it in the past. And once they've come and taken you for whatever manufactured reason they've decided that you need to be locked up, you are at their mercy. And don't mind me, by the way, my brain is still a little bit tired here. I'm like rusty cold, just like the computers. They were all groaning this morning when I was firing them up. All right. Anyway, so in the period that this doctor was paid, and this was Dr. Donald Cameron, 1957 to 1964, Cameron administered electroconvulsive therapy at 30 to 40 times the normal power, and he would put patients into a drug-induced coma for months on end and play back tapes of simple statements or repetitive noises over and over again. Wow, how about Guantanamo Bay? I mean, we tortured the crap out of those people, and we were trying to extract information. You don't think that, like, some of those techniques came from stuff like this? Because I think so. Some victims forgot how to talk, forgot about their parents, and suffered serious amnesia. And all of this was performed on Canadian citizens because the CIA was not willing to risk such operations on Americans. Oh, how nice of them. Prove your loyalty, Canada. To ensure that the project remained funded, Cameron, in one scheme, took his experiments upon admitted children. In one situation, I'm not even going to read this. He and other MKUltra officers would blackmail the officials to ensure more funding. Number two, mustard gas tested on soldiers via involuntary gas chambers. As bioweapon research intensified in the 1940s, officials also began testing its repercussions and defenses on the Army itself. Well, they did it with the nuclear veterans as well. In order to test the effectiveness of various bioweapons, officials were known to have sprayed mustard gas and other skin-burning, lung-ruining chemicals on soldiers without their consent or knowledge of the experiment happening to them. Can anyone say Agent Orange? And they also tested effectiveness of gas masks and protective clothing by locking soldiers in a gas chamber and exposing them to mustard gas, evoking the gas chamber images of Nazi Germany. Upon contact with the skin, the gas immediately causes extreme pain, itching, swelling, and even a rash. Large fluid-filled blisters develop 12 hours after exposure in the form of intensely severe chemical burns. And that's just contact with the gas. Inhaling of the gas causes burning the lungs, sneezing, vomiting, and pulmonary edema. et cetera, was also rumored that along with the soldiers, patients at the VA hospitals. Now, that's one of the places where it absolutely is happening right now. And we've talked about that ad nauseum in regards to DARPA and many of these technologies, how they're all about to save the ailing veterans who've been injured because of our, 20 years being at war in the Middle East. Patients at VA hospitals were being used as guinea pigs for medical experiments involving biowarfare chemicals, but all experiments were changed to be known as quote unquote observations to ward off suspicion. Number three, the U.S. grants immunity to involuntary surgery monster. As the head of Japan's infamous Unit 731, which was a covert biological and chemical warfare research and development unit of the Imperial Japanese Army during World War II, Dr. Shiro Ishii, head of medicine, carried out violent human experimentation with tens of thousands during the Second Sino-Japanese War and World War II. Wow, I wonder if we brought him on for our Operation Paperclip just with the Nazi doctors. Ishii was responsible for testing vivisection techniques without any anesthesia on human prisoners. For the uninitiated, vivisection is the act of conducting experimental surgery on living creatures and examining their insides for scientific purposes. So basically, he was giving unnecessary surgery to prisoners by opening them all the way up, keeping them alive, and not using any anesthetic. Following the defeat in 1945, Japan blew up the Unity 731 complex, and Ishii ordered all the remaining logs to be executed. Not soon after, Ishii was arrested, and then the respected General Douglas MacArthur allegedly struck a deal. How did I know with Ishii? If the U.S. granted Ishii immunity from his crimes, he must exchange all germ warfare data based on human experimentation. So there you go, people. Another one. I didn't know about Ishii. That would actually be some pretty interesting research to do. Let me spell his name for you. Ishii. So Ishii got away with his crimes because the U.S. became interested in the results of his research. And this is all dovetailing into what we were talking about yesterday with Plum Island. While not directly responsible for these acts, the actions of the American government certainly illustrated it was more than willing to condone human torture for advancements in biological warfare that could kill even more people. Ishii remained alive until 1959, performing research into bioweaponry and probably thinking of more plans to annihilate people in different Dr. Giggle-esque ways to his dying day. All right, number four, deadly chemical sprays on American cities. And I've read about a bunch of these, showing once again that the U.S. always tends to test out worst-case scenarios by getting to them first. And with the advent of biochemical warfare in the mid-20th century, the Army, CIA, and the government conducted a series of warfare simulations upon American cities to see how the effects would play out in the event of an actual chemical attack. Wow, doesn't that have echoes of, was it last summer or the summer before, the New York City subway system where they released that innocuous, that so they said, bacteria or virus floating through the air so they could track. I don't know what it was they released, but they released something, some chemical agent that they were able to track as it floated through the New York City subway system. And how interestingly so, they did the same thing in the UK's Tube. It was right around the same time, same summer, within like a month or two of each other, and it was all under the guise of keeping us safe from bioterror. Anyway, let's flip back to the story. They conducted the following airstrike slash naval attacks. Number one, the CIA released a whooping cough virus. Oh, really? Remember the whole big quote unquote outbreak in the Pacific Northwest just recently? The CIA released a whooping cough virus on Tampa Bay using boats and so caused a whooping cough epidemic. 12 people died. Number two, The Navy sprayed San Francisco, I actually remember reading about this, with bacterial pathogens, and in consequence, many citizens developed pneumonia. Oh, pneumonia's been added now, too, to the list of quarantinable offenses. Number three, upon Savannah, Georgia and Avon Park, Florida, the Army released millions of mosquitoes. No! This is a 1-2-3 bang! They released millions of mosquitoes in the hope that they would spread yellow fever and dengue fever. The swarms left Americans struggling with fevers, typhoid, respiratory problems, and the worst, stillborn children. So wait a second. So now we're releasing mosquitoes to quote-unquote battle dengue and chikungunya. Oh, the complicated web we weave. So again, they just pull out all the same stops. They're like, hey, these all worked before. Even worse was that after the swarm of mosquitoes, the Army came in disguised as public health workers, a.k.a. like the Ebola SWAT team. Their secret intention the entire time that they were giving aid to the victims was to study and chart out the long-term effects of all the illnesses that they were suffering. Wow. That's pretty amazing. I also know of other experiments. There was one I remember we read about when we were first digging into Fukushima back in 2011 that we discovered somewhere up in the Northeast here. Maybe it was Detroit or Chicago. I don't remember what city it was. But in the 1940s or 50s, maybe, they had sprayed an entire neighborhood with radioactive particles to see what would happen as well. And I mean, remember, we also know about like West Nile virus and Lyme disease and some of the work that was going on up at Plum Island, like we had talked about. Thousand Islands in New York State had this horrible, horrible pandemic of mosquitoes many, many, many years ago that seemed somewhat suspicious and not too far away from Plum Island. So I don't know. I'm not going to say that it hasn't happened, and obviously it has happened before. All right. Mosquitoes have been a weapon of choice for a long time. Number five, the U.S. infects Guatemalans with STDs. Yes, the Guatemalans got it too. In the 1940s, with penicillin as an established cure for syphilis, the U.S. decided to test out its effectiveness on Guatemalan citizens. To do this, they used infected prostitutes and let them loose on unknowing prison inmates, insane asylum patients, and soldiers. And when spreading the disease through prostitution didn't work as well as they hoped, they instead went for the inoculation route. Researchers poured syphilis bacteria onto men's private parts and on their forearms and faces. In some cases, they even inoculated the men through spinal punctures. After all the infections were transmitted, researchers then gave most of the subjects treatment, though as many as one-third of them have been left untreated, even if that was the intention of the study. Could have been left untreated, even if that was the intention of the study in the first place. On October 1st, 2010, Hillary Clinton apologized for the events, and new research has gone on to see if anyone affected is still alive and affected with syphilis. Since many of the subjects never got penicillin, it is possible and likely that someone spread it to future generations. This one we know about, human experiments to test the effectiveness of the atomic bomb. While testing out and trying to harness the power of the atomic bomb, U.S. scientists also secretly tested the bomb's effects on humans during the Manhattan Project. Yes, yes, yes. That is the most toxic waste that exists on planet Earth. Mind you, it is still sitting up in Hanford, Washington, down at Los Alamos Laboratory in New Mexico, and in the WIP facility down in Carlsbad, New Mexico. And it's now all being packaged up and shipped to where? Yes, Andrews, Texas. A WCS facility. Why? Because the WIP facility has a leak. And in Los Alamos, they have it sitting outside in barrels. And 2 years ago, when they had all the wildfires, those plutonium barrels were getting dangerously closely surrounded by flames, and they said, we need to get this underground. Interestingly enough, and this isn't part of the story, this is just my take on all this. Interestingly enough, that Andrew's facility is not going to be burying this shit underground where it should be, in a mountain somewhere, not above an aquifer. The Manhattan Project waste actually, too, contaminates a lot of the northern Buffalo region around North Tonawanda. I had some firsthand experience there. Army Corps of Engineers was responsible for that. There were a couple companies up in North Tonawanda, right near a place I used to work. And I remember, too, asking everyone why the whole neighborhood had these huge, like, 8-foot signs with big red and black skull and crossbones on their front yards. And I knew nothing about it. But, yes, they had done Manhattan Project research right in Tonawanda, New York. And when the facility was being decommissioned, the Army Corps of Engineers was brought in, and they did a half-baked, half-assed job, which is typical of them, and spread Manhattan Project waste all over Tonawanda and dumped it in dumps that did not take any type of radioactive waste. So now there are, I believe, 4 or 5 Superfund sites up there because of that. Many sick people, all kinds of cancers and whatever. It's a pretty sad situation. Anyway, during the Manhattan Project, which gave way to the atomic bomb that destroyed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, U.S. scientists resorted to secret human testing via plutonium injection on 18 unsuspecting, non-consenting patients. This included injecting soldiers with micrograms of plutonium for Project Oak Ridge, along with later injecting these patients at a Chicago hospital. Imagine you're an admitted patient, helpless in a hospital bed, assuming nothing is wrong when the government suddenly appears and puts weapons-grade plutonium in your blood. Out of the 18 patients who were known only by their code names and numbers at the time, only 5 lived longer than 20 years after injection. Along with plutonium, researchers also had fun with uranium. At a Massachusetts hospital, there you go, Dan, 1946 and 1947, Dr. William Sweet injected 11 patients with uranium, and he was also funded by the Manhattan Project. You know what, guys? I'm seeing echoes, echo, 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 to DARPA, 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 DARPA. I'm sure DARPA had much to do somewhere. Maybe they weren't even called DARPA at the time, with the Manhattan Project. This is the sprinkling of funds around for all of these inhumane experiments that are going on. But now it's the Brain Project, or it's being able to insert microchips into your brain. Mind control, removing and inserting memories. It's all the same bastards. So Dr. William Sweet, in exchange for injecting these 11 patients with uranium, he received from the government, he would get to keep the dead tissue from the bodies of the people he killed for scientific analysis on the effects of uranium exposure. Number 7, injecting prisoners with Agent Orange. Yes, plus all the Americans and the Vietnamese that were over in Vietnam. Well, and there's a video here, but I am not going to play it, since this video may be disturbing. While they received funding from Agent Orange producing Dow Chemical Company. Now, that, though, I don't know if it is true. Somebody help me out here, but I thought Agent Orange was Monsanto's creation. I know I've looked that up before. Though, I mean, maybe somewhere along the way, Dow and Monsanto were somehow interrelated, or maybe Dow was a partner in it. I don't know. I do know that I have seen Agent Orange on a Monsanto list of horrifying creations. Well, Okay, as they received funding from Dow Chemical, the U.S. Army, and Johnson & Johnson, Dr. Albert Klingman used prisoners as subjects in what was deemed, quote unquote, a dermatological research. The dermatology aspect was testing out products, the effects of products of Agent Orange on the skin. Needless to say, the injecting of or exposure to dioxin, oh, dioxin, that was Love Canal. Again, up around Niagara Falls, which is near Tonawanda in New York State. Dioxin is beyond monstrous to voluntarily do to any human being. Klingman, though, injected dioxin, which is a main component of Agent Orange, into prisoners to study its effects. What did happen is that the prisoners developed an eruption of chloracne that developed on the cheeks, behind the ears, armpits, and the groin. Yes, the groin. Klingman was rumored to have injected 468 times the amount that he was authorized to. And documentation of that effect has not been distributed. The Army oversaw while Klingman continued to test out skin-burning chemicals to, quote, learn how the skin protects itself against chronic assault from toxic chemicals, and to test out how many products whose effects were unknown at the time, but with the intent of figuring that out. Number eight, and we know about this one, da, 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 Operation Paperclip. While the Nuremberg trials were being conducted and the ethics and rights of humanity were under investigation, the U.S. was secretly taking in Nazi scientists and giving them American identities. Under Operation Paperclip, named so because of the paperclips used to attach the scientists' new profiles to the U.S. personnel pages. I don't know what this is. Nazis who had worked in the infamous human experiments, which included surgically grafting twins to each other and making them conjoined, removing nerves from people's bodies without anesthetic, and testing explosion effects on them in Germany, brought over their talents to work with a number of top secret projects for the US. Given then President Truman's anti-Nazi orders, the project was kept under wraps and the scientists received fake political biographies, allowing these monsters to live on not only on American soil, but as free men. And while it was a not direct experimentation, it was the US taking some of the worst people in the world and giving them jobs here to do unknown, horrible experiments and research. And by the way, Pigmine, that's one of the topics that he tracks. I don't remember which channel it was on, but I actually put that on my list last night. If there isn't a playlist, we need to build one on the Nazis, because I remember a couple videos. Anytime that they discover another former Nazi under a new identity that's been living here in the United States, there typically is a story about it. And there was one just recently, maybe within the last 8 to 10 months. They had discovered a guy, he's probably in his 70s or his 80s now, and he's been living his life happily on Social Security. They were not happy when the media showed up at his door. They all should be facing crimes against humanity, not being quietly hidden by the government and given new identities. Number nine, and this is one we've talked about many times before, infecting Puerto Rico with cancer. That was back in the 1960s in that biolab down in New Orleans, where they were working on that cancer, quote unquote, vaccine, but it wasn't a vaccine to cure cancer. It was a vaccine to give cancer. And that was to take out Fidel Castro, remember? And actually, just recently, many of the leaders within the last couple of years, many of the leaders down in South America have been coming out and being very vocal about the United States wanting to take them out with their fast-acting cancer that they had been researching. All right, well, this one, infecting Puerto Rico with cancer. In 1931, Dr. Cornelius Rhodes was sponsored by the Rockefeller Institute to conduct experiments in Puerto Rico. He infected Puerto Rico citizens with cancer cells, presumably to study the effects. 13 of them died, and what's most striking is the accusations stem from a note he allegedly wrote quote, the Puerto Ricans, and I'm not even going to read this, all physicians might take delight in the abuse and torture of the unfortunate subjects, unquote. A man that seems to be hellbent on killing Puerto Ricans through cancer infestation would not seem a suitable candidate to be elected by the U.S. to be in charge of a chemical warfare project and receive a seat on the United States Atomic Energy Commission, right? Well, that's exactly what happened. He also became the vice president of the American Cancer Society. Holy crap, we need to look into Dr. Cornelius Rhoads, spelled R-H-O-A-D-S. I didn't know about him either. This is one that I knew about. Pentagon treats black cancer patients with extreme radiation. In the 1960s, the Department of Defense performed a series of irradiation experiments on non-consenting poor African-American cancer patients. They were told they would be receiving treatment, but they weren't told it would be quote-unquote Pentagon type of treatments, meaning to study the effects of high levels of radiation on the human body. To avoid litigation, forms were signed only with initials so that the patients would have no way to get back at their government. In a similar case, Dr. Eugene Sanger, funded by the Defense Atomic Support Agency, conducted the same procedure on the same type of patients. The poor black Americans received the same levels of radiation as 7,500 x-rays to their chest would, which caused intense pain, vomiting, and bleeding from their nose and ears. At least 20 of the patients died. Number 11, Operation Midnight Climax. Oh, this one's got to be good. Here's a government experiment that, when you Google it, has completely different image results than web results. Operation Midnight Climax involves safe houses in New York and San Francisco, built for the sole purpose to study LSD effects on non-consenting individuals. But in order to lure individuals there, the CIA made these safe houses out to be, wait for it, brothels. Prostitutes on the CIA payroll. And yes, there was such a thing. Lured clients back to the houses, but instead of having sex with them, they dosed them with a number of substances, most famously LSD. This also involved extensive use of marijuana, and the experiments were monitored behind two-way mirrors, kind of like a sick, twisted peep show. Furthermore, it's alleged that the officials who ran the experiments described them as it was fun. Where else could an American red-blooded boy lie, cheat, kill, steal, rape, pillage with the sanction and bidding of the all-highest? Yes, people, that is our government. The most horrifying part of the idea of dosing non-consenting adults with drugs is that they couldn't possibly know the effects of those drugs. Number 12, fallout radiation on unsuspecting Pacific territories. Yes, this too. After unleashing hell upon Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the United States embarked upon numerous thermonuclear bomb tests in the Pacific in response to increased Soviet bomb activity. They were intended to be a secret affair. However, the secrecy would fail. Detonated in 1954 over Bikini Atoll in the Marshall Islands, Castle Bravo was the most powerful nuclear device the U.S. ever set off. What they didn't expect was for the fallout from the blast to inadvertently be blown upwind onto nearby residents of other islands. The suffering included birth defects and radiation sickness. The effects were greater felt in later years when many children of whose parents were exposed to the fallout developed thyroid cancer and neoplasms. This created Project 4.1, a study to examine the effects of radiation fallout on human beings. Essentially, it was the latest in a long string of studies where humans act as guinea pigs without giving consent, and a project remembered by the U.S. as a way to gather data that would otherwise be obtainable. People, I believe that's exactly what is going on in Japan. That's why many of those people never were evacuated. That's why they allowed them to still eat the food and drink the water and didn't make a mass migration out of the big cities. This is a big, fat human experiments where the petri dish is outside. And I mean, anyone who calls any of us conspiracy theorists about any of this stuff, I mean, just listen to this history. Evilness, absolute evil. The U.S. moral standard that history best remembers is that even though the radiation fallout on the people of the Martian Islands was an accident, it might as well have been intended. In addition, perhaps as nature's way of adding insult to injury, a Japanese fishing boat was caught in the fallout and all the fishermen fell ill. One died, making the Japanese livid that the U.S. was still affecting them with their nuclear devices. And I mean, they should be so pissed now because those reactors, the BRW, the Mark IV, I don't know. I don't remember what the BWR, boiling water reactor, that Unit 3 was, especially in Fukushima, happened to be a GE unit, American company. And number 13, probably one of the most famous, is Tuskegee, Alabama. The recent uncovering of the U.S. exposing Guatemalans to syphilis brings back to mind this infamous study. Between 1932 and 1972, researchers recruited 400 black sharecroppers in Tuskegee, Alabama, to study the natural progression of syphilis. But the scientists never told the men that they had syphilis. Instead, they went around believing that they were being treated for quote-unquote bad blood disease. As researchers used them to find out the extent of syphilis' symptoms and effects. In 1947, penicillin became the standard cure for syphilis, but along with withholding information about the disease, scientists also forgot to tell their subjects, so they say, that what they were being treated for had a cure. And so the study continued for nearly 30 years. Once it was discovered, the backlash of the study was so fierce that at the time, President Bill Clinton made a formal apology stating that he was sorry that the government, quote, orchestrated a study that was so racist, unquote. Sadly enough, it would be horrific, but for one of the more docile, evil human experiments ever conducted by the U.S. government. Yeah, they weren't chopping off body parts, at least. So there you go. Those are 13 of the ones that we know about, ones that were admitted, ones that have come out in documentation. What scares me are the ones we don't know about. Here, I'm going to drop this in chat for you. What a great way to kick off the morning. So where do we go from here? I thought I actually caught something. So, you know, I mean, we look at all these quote unquote super bugs, Ebolas, whooping cough epidemic, swine flu, bird flu. What's the newest one? CRE, Gardasil, HPV. You know, and we have ways to now treat them, line it up, but we're not going to tell you, we're not going to make it headline news that we have nanotech or we have synthetic biology or we have RNAi in it and we have absolutely no idea really what it's going to do in the long term because what? We haven't really tested it. So we're testing it on you. Like I said, R&D line item budgets. Once all these corporations that are doing this research, and now it's not evil scientists that we rescued from Nazi Germany or Japan, it's evil scientists that we're recruiting from biopharma companies that DARPA has identified that is doing this research on the American public in general. All right. Well, here we go. Maybe we can connect here. Oh, no. This isn't a video. This is Michio. Michio. Good old Michio is back at it again. And what's so amazing about this is exactly what we've been saying, because many of these, I just can't even get over, like, most of this brain project research is all about curing our soldiers. You know, I could have swore, though, that there were a few stories last night that I posted here, and I don't see them. Interesting. Well, I'm not going to be able to deal with it right now as I'm reading. So maybe we'll have to catch them tomorrow. All right. Michio Kaku, good New World Order shill Michio Kaku, reveals how we could use our brains in the next 50 years. The holiday of the future will still provide memories of strolls along sunny beaches and the sensation of sand between your toes and the peaceful rush of ocean, but there will be one crucial difference. You won't ever have to have actually been away. In fact, you may have not even left your home. Yes, instead, people will just download memories into their brains to make them feel as if they had been on a sun-kissed holiday. That is one of the many realities we could face as we learn to manipulate the human mind, says U.S. physicist Dr. Michio Kaku in an exclusive interview. Hold on one second. I thought I had a video from Michio here the other day. And I mean, this might actually bring us right back into nanotech and our food. Maybe that's where we'll hop back on tomorrow. All right. Dr. Kaku is best known for his expertise in theoretical physics, and his previous books have dealt with such topics as parallel universes and the cosmos. But his latest book, The Future of the Mind, takes a look at how rapid advancements could bring about huge changes in how we understand and use our brains in the next 50 to 100 years. His theories on the future of the mind are wide ranging, from the possibilities of telepathy to controlling quote-unquote programmable matter with our thoughts alone. At times, his opinions sure sound like science fiction, but he is convinced that these developments we'll see not just in the distant future, but by the end of the century. Of particular interest is the ability to implant memories, and that is all DARPA research and this whole massive brain project that the universities, the federal government, the National Institute of Health, and Google, as well as Microsoft and Motorola, are all involved in. Quote, first of all, this is Kaku. First of all, someone goes on vacation before you and pleasant memories such as walking on a seashore and picking up rocks are put on a disc. Then they are uploaded into your own mind. Relax, and there you are at the beach. Feel the wind on your face, hear the sound of the waves and all the sensations. You'll have a memory of a very nice walk on the beach at some exotic location. And that's what this person felt before you felt. These things are within the realms of possibility. It is only a matter of time. All of this will be made possible by significant advances in our understanding of the brain. And as Dr. Kaku points out, we have learned more about the brain in the last 15 years than we have in the rest of human history. Yeah, we should be very afraid, people. And crucially, our knowledge of the map of neural connections in the brain, known as the connectome, is rapidly improving. And guess who was working on the connectome project? IBM. IBM with their Watson healthcare cognitive computing Nazi numbering train system. Watson. Oh. It just all comes back to the same creepy group of people. Yes, we know a lot about the connectome thanks to things such as MRI scanners that can see which parts of the brain light up as a person performs different activities. In the short term, we're going to be able to connect our minds to computers so that we will be able to control exoskeletons, he said, which they're already doing with injured soldiers. We'll be able to perform primitive forms of telepathy. We'll eventually record memories. And then Alzheimer's patients will be able to push a button and memories will flood all back in. Beyond that, the internet will be replaced by the brain net, where you can convey emotions and memories rather than just text. And remember the brain net, because I think that's where we're going to end this. Further into the future, probably in the 22nd century, we could control surrogate robots on alien worlds with our minds, like Avatar. So we can explore space without physically having to go anywhere, according to Dr. Kaku. Maybe aliens have already done this, and we're walking into the middle of an interstellar system where people commute regularly to planets and stars, and we're just too stupid to know it, he said. On telepathy, Kaku says, we can already take someone who is totally paralyzed, hook them up to a computer, and allow them to send messages on the internet. In the future, you could walk into a room, mentally turn on the lights, internet, answer emails, call up for a movie, and indeed, the computer mouse will gradually be phased out. This will be possible thanks to programmable matter, the dream of creating little tiny dust particles with the power of a PC. Oh, where did we hear that before? What was that for nanotech? Eric Drexler, the father of nanotechnology, had said that in a cubic micron, we had the power of our desktop PC already. Kaku says this will be made possible thanks to programmable matter, the dream of creating little tiny dust particles with the power of a PC known as catoms that can change their electrical charge and be rearranged all by our minds. At that moment, we are, quote, nowhere near getting down to the grain of sand, but Kaku insists that it can be addressed in the future. In principle, in the future, mid-century, when you walk into a room, you'll mentally control all computers which are invisible. And remember, that's the whole premise pretty much behind the Internet of Things. That whole Google push, everything will be interconnected. And remember, that has to tie in with all the smart home stuff, which, hey, Regina Duggan, former director at DARPA, was involved in and involved with Motorola and Samsung. The goal of programmable matter, to have the ability like a magician, and by late in this century, we might have full power. He added, someone from the outside watching us would think we were sorcerers. Advancements in brain manipulation have important moral implications in the future, too, according to Kaku. Quote, you could fire a gun and record that and insert it into an innocent person's brain so he thinks he fired a gun when he didn't. And yes, that's what we need to be concerned of, people. Right now, we still have control over our faculties somewhat, even though we are manipulated by many outside influences, including what's so easy as propaganda, which is a lot of what's happening right now. All these people with massive cognitive dissonance that don't believe that any of this is going on have been manipulated mentally. But when they can physically remove and replace memories to make you believe that something happened that didn't, I mean, that's like Psychoville right there. Kaku says it'll be entirely possible that we will one day be able to upload entire skill sets into a person's brain. To become a doctor, for instance, someone could have all the relevant medical terminology and procedures uploaded into their mind. However, he does not think that this will make education obsolete, as people will still need to learn how to use this information. If you want to be a great chess player, learning the moves of chess is not enough. You'll have to chew on it, and you'll regurgitate games of the past. In the future, you'll be able to learn the basic rules of calculus, but if you think, what does it mean, or how can I apply this to new situations, then you'll have to chew on it, and that you have to do by yourself. All this sounds a bit daunting, but Dr. Kaku says that we may be able to look for guidance, not on Earth, but in the discovery of intelligent races elsewhere in the cosmos who, quote unquote, mentally communicate with each other. Some of my friends who listen for messages think first contact will happen in the next few decades. Although Dr. Kaku thinks that estimate is a bit soon, he says that if it was possible that contact is made, a race could be an alien consciousness rather than physical beings like humans, and he does not necessarily think that they will be dangerous. Well, I'm glad you think that. He said that such a future for humanity was not impossible, and that ultimately the ability to liberate ourselves from the inconveniences of the human body, yes, that is what they believe, 2045 Project, would allow us to explore space like never before, and that is the ultimate plan, is to get off this rock, remember. Until then, we will have to make do with downloadable holidays, programmable matter, and learning new skills at the touch of a button. Go meet you, spreading more of your new world order, merging with the machine bullshit. Now, one of the things that he had mentioned in that article was the brain net. And there's some stuff that's going on with the internet right now that should be concerning all of us. And they're putting it under the guise of net neutrality and the FCC taking over. But I was reading this story from the Wall Street Journal yesterday that brought up some serious questions. And if I can get there. It's titled, From Internet to ObamaNet. And remember, Obama inked an executive order. Must have been last week already. After the hacking of 100, the quote-unquote hacking of 100 international banks. And the stealing of over $1 billion, which, of course, made it real easy to then just jump out in front and go, hey, we need global security on the internet and regulation. We are now going to put the regulation of the internet under the FCC, just like we have for other utilities. And I read something, and maybe it was in the story. Yes, they're bullying the FCC chairman. And they are like going to steamroll this through. Critics call President Obama's quote unquote net neutrality plan, call it Obamacare for the internet. And that should make us afraid, knowing what we know with the connections between Obamacare and precision medicine that we talked on this show about for 3 or 4 weeks. Both Obamacare and quote unquote ObamaNet submit huge industries to complex regulations, and their supporters say that new rules had to be passed before anyone could read them. Hey, they're doing it again. Massive bills that nobody gets to read. But at least Obamacare claimed it would solve a long-standing problem. ObamaNet promises to fix an internet that isn't broken. The permissionless internet, which allows anyone to introduce a website, app, or device without government review, ends this week. Without government review. On Thursday, the three Democrats, among the five commissioners on the Federal Communications Commission, will vote to regulate the internet under rules written for monopoly utilities. No one, including the bullied FCC chairman Tom Wheeler, thought the agency would go this far. The big politicization came when Obama in November demanded that the supposedly independent FCC apply the agency's most extreme regulations to the internet. And a recent Page One Wall Street Journal story headline, Net Neutrality, How the White House Thwarted FCC Chief, documented, quote, an unusual secretive effort inside of the White House acting as a parallel version of the FCC itself, unquote. How surprising that something like this is coming out of Wall Street Journal. Congress is now demanding details of this interference. In the early 1980s, a congressional investigation blasted at the time President Reagan for telling his FCC chairman his view of regulations about television reruns. Quote, I believe it is imperative for the integrity of all regulatory processes that the president unequivocally declare that he will express no view in the matter and that he will do nothing to interfere in the work of the FCC, said Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, a New York Democrat at the time. Obama's role raises legal as well as political questions. Those harmed by the new rules could argue in court that political pressure made the agency's actions, quote, arbitrary and capricious. The more than 300 pages of new regulations are secret. But Mr. Wheeler says that they will subject the internet to the key provisions of Title II of the Communications Act of 1934, under which the FCC oversaw Ma Bell. And if anyone remembers how draconian Ma Bell was at the time, I remember being a kid back in the early 70s, and you had the one phone on your wall, you know, that pukey flesh-colored phone. You had one phone jack. And you couldn't buy phones in a store. And phones had just started coming out in the store. And I remember my dad installed a second phone jack in the house. And we got one of those funky new phones that you could buy. And I remember my mother telling me that if anyone ever comes to the door from the phone company, don't let them in. And the phone company was like the FBI or the CIA at the time. And I don't know. I don't know what this is going to do. But guys, they're coming for it. They're coming for it all. Title II authorizes the commission to decide what quote-unquote charges or practices are just and reasonable, an enormous amount of discretion. And it's all subjective, by the way. Former FCC Commissioner Robert McDowell has found 290 federal appeal court opinions on this section and more than 1,700 FCC administrative interpretations. And if you think that you're going to win any type of lawsuit against a federal agency, it is probably not going to happen. Defenders of the Obama plan claim that there will be regulatory, quote unquote, forbearance, though not from the just and reasonable test. They also promise not to regulate prices. Yeah, so that's all they're worried about is prices. But what about content? Remember, content's what we're worried about, or whether or not your website is going to be allowed now under terms and conditions to be on the internet anymore. Whether or not you, who's on some list somewhere that you don't know about, are going to be allowed to even register a domain name because you might be dangerous. And with the advent of ISIS and, oh my God, spreading of radicalization on the internet, you might just be deemed radical and not know it. And be banned or blacklisted from being on the internet. And one last thing before we end up here, I saw a couple commercials the other day about Intel's new bio, what's it called? Where you use body, I don't even remember, thumbprints, facial scans. They're going to have built-in facial scanning as built-in passwords coming for a computer coming to you soon. We're going to have to wear disguises to set up a new identity to even access the internet at some point soon. All right, guys, it was a fast hour. Everybody stay warm. It's 6 degrees here now. Have a great Tuesday. Make sure you stick around. There's lots of radio tonight. Mr. Kevin Blanch, Chuck O'Chelly, Prepper Chicks, Primer Time, and Intermedia.